Welcome, everyone. So glad you're here. This is the breakout is called I'm Perfect and My Spouse is Messed Up, and so I need you to help me fix them. So welcome to partnering with your spouse for growth and change. Kristen.
Hi. It's fun to be here. So many familiar faces. I kind of want to just spend 10 minutes giving hugs, but we need to get moving. So Scott and I, Kristen, we've been married 21 years. We have four boys. You probably don't recognize any of them. Just in 2 years, they have changed immensely if you knew them. To your far left, that is Carson. He's about to be 16. He is in 10th grade at Midway High School. Next to him is Duncan. He does not look like that. He is got a really, I consider for an 18-year-old, a creepy mustache.
Very creepy.
And a middle part now and long kind of curly hair. He is a freshman at Baylor, right?
Sikkim.
And then to the right of Scott is Drew, Duncan's twin, and he is at Belmont in Nashville, studying commercial music, songwriting, playing guitar all the time. And on the end there is Lincoln. He's our baby. He's as tall as I am and should be playing football, but he's going to stick with basketball. And so that is our crew. We were at Watermark from 2002 to 2020, and then we moved south. I think it's 90 miles, but it still takes 2 hours to get here from Waco, Texas, and we are now at Harris Creek Baptist Church. Scott was here on staff, merge, foundation groups, all of the marriage things. It's fun to sit on the other side of a marriage conference and not have to do all the little details. So we've enjoyed so much being back here. He is starting a marriage ministry at Harris Creek right now, and we are just love the opportunity to share the years of experience here and just share that somewhere else.
Yeah, it is. It is so good to be back at this place. We love this church, and
we didn't have this problem last time. No, I don't know why.
We love you, Scott.
Our lives were changed here. Our marriage was changed here. Our children all came to know the Lord at this church. In fact, I think a few of them, it might have actually been in this room when they prayed the prayer in kids ministry. And we love being back. And it is fun. It's fun to get a weekend to work on marriages. And just like Kristen said, usually as part of the team that planned out every detail, it's so good to just show up and have no responsibility whatsoever. And last night, how about that surprise? Anyone know that was coming? David Zine in the back might have been the only one in this room who knew. And so, hey, we're pumped to be here with you and talk about what it looks like to grow and to work together in our marriage. There's a QR code if you want to get a picture, copy of our slides. You can scan that and follow along. We have seven things that we're going to teach you, and so they will be super easy to follow. Thank you. And you can take notes in your book if you like, and then slides if you want a copy of what we're going to share. This talk is really born out of 16 years in full-time marriage ministry. And so, of getting to work with a lot of couples in every season of life, pre-married, newly married, enrichment, crisis, empty nest, everything from dating to the end of life. We've worked with couples all over the spectrum. And it also comes from 21 years of marriage. Of one sinner being married to another sinner. And so we're going to talk out of our story and then a lot of what we have seen over the years and couples that we have sat down with. Specifically, what really brought this to front of mind as a topic, Lance reached out and said, Scott, we'd love to have you do a breakout. What would you want to do? And this is a brand new talk. The people who were at the first breakout were the first ones to hear it. We have since perfected it. And so now you get the better 2.0 version. But this is a new talk. Typically, we do things we've done before. This is brand new to us, and then it will be for you as well. But this comes out of just a lot of time with couples who are struggling. And so a few months ago, or weeks ago, after we talked with Lance about what we want to do, I said, I think I want to talk about what it looks like to help a spouse when they're stuck in sin or struggles. And so that's every single one of us. It really is every married couple. And so I'm walking down the street, doing some laps in my neighborhood, and I run into a guy who lives in our neighborhood. older couple, not old, but older, probably married 35 years. He pulls out of his driveway, stops, and we just catch up for a few minutes. What's going on? How's your group? How's work? And then all of a sudden, he just starts opening up about his marriage. His wife, who loves Jesus, is struggling deeply with depression, and it is wreaking havoc in their lives. She is having trouble again, out of bed at times, suicidal at times. They're very active in our church. They're in a small group. They're in counseling. She's on medication. And they're just like trying to figure out, how do we survive? How do we make it to the next day? And so we talked for a few minutes. We prayed. I'm weeping as we're talking and just catching up and as we pray. And, you know, I'm just thinking through, like, what can he do? What could she do? What can the church do? How can this, you know, what's the Lord going to do? Because that's the only hope we have, is how does this couple really continue to move forward in the midst of some very real struggles that are symptomatic of what a lot of us are walking through?
So it may look like friends that are newly married and then suddenly pregnant, and then you realize that your spouse is struggling with an addiction to prescription medications. It may be that you've got friends who one of them is an alcoholic, and so you're trying to figure out how to help your spouse in that situation, or help them help their spouse. Chronic illness. So nothing that you've done or your spouse has done, but just something that you have been given to steward as a married couple. And so again, some of those are choices that you make that are sin, and some of those are just things that the Lord gives you.
It's a couple where pornography is a big issue, and not just for the husband, for the wife as well. And they both know it's wrong. They both know they want to follow Jesus and be obedient and not give in to sinful desires, but they both have this deep struggle with porn, and they don't feel the freedom to talk about it. Maybe he feels some freedom, but she doesn't, because we always talk about guys looking at porn, but we very rarely talk about a woman who struggles with porn, which is very common. And so they're stuck in isolation, and they don't know what to do. And then this is largely our struggle. And so I have struggled with eating my entire life. Okay, not eating, because we all eat. It's not struggling with eating. It's struggling with eating too much. It's struggling with looking for eating to make me happy, to make my problems go away, to feel better about myself, to feel comfort in the midst of stress, to feel comfort when I feel alone. And so I continually have this problem that has affected our family, the way I lead. It affects our marriage. It has led to a diagnosis of high blood pressure many years ago, a diagnosis of high cholesterol, and then recently adding to the mix of being diagnosed as a 49-year-old with four kids and a marriage, you know, job that he loves and a family he loves and friends he loves. Now I have diabetes, type 2 onset, you know, adult onset. And so I am literally making decisions that are leading me to kill myself slowly. And so what is my part in that? What is Kristen's? What can she do to help me when her desire is to not fix me, but to help her husband be better, you know, be less sick, and to make decisions that allow him to continue to thrive as a husband, as a dad, as a friend, as a pastor. And so it's a continual issue that we have addressed at times with success and other times not. And so we're writing this for us as well, not just for you. It's for us. We need it just as badly.
And for me, a lot of times it looks like people pleasing. So saying yes to things without considering the cost to myself or my family. And just saying yes because I want to make sure everybody's happy. I'm a 9 on the Enneagram, so peace abounds. And whatever I can do to make that happen, that tends to be my ditch. And so just Scott helping me through those decisions too.
Yes, so we're going to talk about 7 things. There's no one passage in the Bible that addresses, you know, if your spouse struggles with eating, then you do X, Y, and Z. If your spouse struggles with addiction to pills, you do this. And so there's no specific passage, and there's definitely not a specific marriage passage. So what do? So you open up God's word, and we're going to look at Galatians chapter 6, verses 1 through 5, an incredible passage that I think largely informs how we can help one another as husband and wife. We're going to talk through 7 principles that come from this passage. There's certainly more, but 7 things that are relevant to what it looks like to help your spouse grow in the midst of their struggles, in the midst of your struggles. These are not sequential. It's not like you do number 1, then you do 2, then 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Number 1 is foundational, and then the rest of them kind of come and go at different times. And so it's not a to-do list. These are some principles that we believe will help you as you continue to work in and on your marriage. And so this is the Apostle Paul writing to the church in Galatia. This is right after, you know, chapter 5 is the fruit of the Spirit. If you walk by the Spirit, this is what comes out of your life. If you walk by the flesh, here's what happens. And so, of course, Paul is encouraging us to walk dependently by the Spirit. And so this follows right on the heels of that, of what it looks like to walk by the Spirit and specifically how to help one another.
I'm just going to read the verse for you. Verses, brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. But watch yourselves, or you also may be tempted. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks they are something when they are not, they deceive themselves. Each one should test their own actions. Then they can take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to someone else. For each one should carry their own load.
Point number one is to expect difficulty. This is written to followers of Christ, brothers and sisters. We are to expect challenges and difficulty in this world. Bless you. I know that is the most obvious thing ever, that we are going to face difficulty, but let's think specifically about why that's the case. And so your marriage, as wonderful and as amazing as you are and as amazing as your spouse is, you are a broken and flawed person who's married to a broken and flawed person who lives in a really messed up, broken world. Paul Tripp says that all the time. Brokenness married to brokenness in a broken world is not a good formula. The good news is we follow a perfect, loving, redemptive Savior. But in the meantime, we're still stuck in these broken bodies in a broken world. The only promise about marriage, I'm sure you've heard this before. What's the one promise about marriage in the entire Bible? You will have trouble. Good. So it's 1 Corinthians 7:28. If you marry, you will have trouble. The only promise, not happiness, not joy, not great kids, not amazing sex, you know, not musical ability like Drew and Ellie. Like the only thing that we're promised is that you'll have trouble. Jesus says in John chapter 16, around the Last Supper, he says that in this world you will have trouble. It's the only promise we know that every single one of us is going to struggle in this life. And when you take a person who struggles and they marry someone who struggles, you are going to have difficulty in your life and in your marriage. And that is why marriage is incredibly difficult work. Okay, this is so challenging, right? Like, I don't know what you heard going into marriage, but it's probably in some ways, I hope it is much greater than anyone told you, and it's probably also more challenging than you've been told. And so we should expect difficulty in marriage.
I think a lot of times we get into marriage, and no matter what, where you fall on the spectrum of you thought it was going to be really easy or you've seen it be really hard, a lot of times when we get into the depths of marriage and something is really hard, like something that doesn't just get fixed and go away, but is ongoing, we still think that we must have made a mistake, like I picked the wrong person or we're not using the right formula. And so it's really easy to want to jump ship, and that's just not what we're called to.
Yeah, so our twins were born on May 26, 2004, which means they were made sometime in 2003, so it wasn't Drew and Ellie's music that led to their conception, but something, I don't know what, but they're made, and they both are formed and developed in this womb, and so both Duncan and Drew were made, and then they were formed in her, so the same, it's awkward, this is not smoking hot monogamy. That's John and Pam's their breakup. But this is, you know, so they're formed in the womb and they grow in Kristen's womb. They're there for 38 and a half weeks. And then they're born on May 26th. And they're born in the same hospital, Baylor Hospital. Same doctors help deliver them. One of the doctors goes here. Dr. Lauren McGregor is a member, helps lead in Blended Family Ministry. She's part of delivering them. They go home with us to 432 Covey Lane in Mesquite, Texas. They live there the first 2 years of their life, and then we go rent a house for a couple months, and then we move to 1318 Cheyenne Drive in Richardson, where they're grown and raised from the ages of 2 or 3 through 16. Then we move to Waco, Texas, and I won't give you our address there, but because we don't live in those other places. And so they're being raised in Waco, Texas. Meanwhile, all the way in their whole life, they've been with the same parents, conceived in the same moment of time, the same home, the same church, the same schools. They were even in a lot of classes together. They've been in the same, you know, small groups since sixth grade. They have been together a very long time. And now, as 18-year-olds, one in Belmont, one in Baylor, they don't even look like siblings. Like, did we really make these two? Because, like, I don't think they're twins. I don't even think they're related. If you can put the picture up of them again, it'd be helpful. So Duncan on this side in the white Baylor polo, he is incredibly extroverted. He loves people. He's been on campus at Baylor for 2.5 months. It feels like he knows everyone. He is living his absolute best life. I mean, he's hanging with friends all the time. He's up at the Baylor OU game today. They went to a casino last night. Like, I'm like, what did we do? Did we raise that child? And he's just like along for the ride. And he is a ride or die fun guy. Smart, he's smart. He's a really sharp kid. But his twin brother, that seems so mean. Just strike that from the recording. His twin brother is really, really bright. Like very, very smart kid, creative, hard, hard worker. Like always going, always working, always writing, just creating all the time. His brain is going in 4,000 directions. He kind of tolerates people. Like, you know, college, he always says college is not a place for introverts. And so he's a big introvert. And they're both amazing kids. Both love Jesus. That's where the similarities stop. I mean, that's it.
They're ours.
Yeah, and they're ours. They've been raised in the same home, same church, same small group, all that. Now you, hopefully you weren't formed in the same womb. That'd be a whole nother problem if you were. You know, you probably didn't grow up in the same town, the same church. You didn't have the same parents, different upbringing, different personalities. Everything about you was radically different. And then God in his beautiful, intimate wisdom decides to take this guy from this home and this upbringing and this woman from her home and upbringing and bring you together. And then it says you are to live in a house together. Now get along with each other. And so if you think for a minute that's going to go easy, we need to be fully expectant of challenges. In this life, we will have trouble. If you marry, you will have trouble. And so we ought to expect difficulty in marriage. Don't ever be surprised by it.
All right, Galatians 6:1, it says, brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, and so we are going to, number two, address the specific issue or address the sin, the struggle, the challenge. You cannot ignore it. Nothing ever improves when we don't identify the issue. Now, that doesn't mean that we're like quick to criticize. We're not going to point the finger. But we've got to be able to confront it, lovingly confront it. And so moving towards that person and being able to point out what that issue is key.
Yeah, and this is context always matters. This is written to followers of Christ. It's written to brothers and sisters. It's not written to dear Navy SEAL Christian, dear professional pastor Christian. This is written to followers of Christ. It says, if you see it, you are to address it. And so often we want to like just push it off on somebody else. But we get the privilege and responsibility in marriage of addressing the sin or the struggle and the person who we are one flesh with. When you do that, you don't ever want to overgeneralize. You always do this. You never do that. You give specifics. It's helpful. And we're going to address the challenges that we see in one another. It's part of the gift of marriage. It's part of the sanctification process.
So Scott and I parent very differently, which ongoing sanctification process in our home is parenting. But there are times where I tend to be more of the, I think I know what they're thinking. They probably did this because of this situation. Like I kind of like pad everything and excuse some of it. Scott's more of like, hey, we've drawn a line. This is a boundary. Here's why it's there. Which we need both, right? We need that in parenting.
Do we?
We do. But there are times where a kid steps over said boundary and or gets that boundary, you know, like defined, and he's like, I don't want that. And so if whichever child it is loses his temper, there was a time where Scott would retaliate, you know, lose his temper as well. I know none of you experience this. This is just our issue, I'm quite sure. And so we have had conversations, and Scott's great. Like, he usually knows when things have gone south, and when it ends, he comes back and he's like, okay, what could I do different? What did you see there? And so there was a time where it was like, you can't match your kid's behavior. If he's 10, you can't act like the 10-year-old who's losing his mind. Like, here's other options. And so just being able to identify, like, hey, in that moment you were angry and this is what you did, and then coming alongside and figuring out other ways. Right?
True story. Right. Yep. Yeah, I'm really good at acting the age of my children. And so if they're 4-year-olds who throw a tantrum, I'm a 4-year-old who throws a tantrum. Dondi, I mean, it's hard, right?
Yes. It is hard, yes.
It's easy to act like that. It's hard to not. Okay, so Galatians 6:1 again, let me go back to it. Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, and so again, expect difficulty. 2, we're going to address the issue if someone is caught in a sin. It says, here's how you do it. You who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. And so 3 is restore with gentleness. And I just like adore this picture, okay, of this guy with his wife. And, you know, I don't know how you, like, I always like looking for good pictures to back up a point. And like, how do you capture gentleness? And the name tag on the side of his arm doesn't really do it. But the way that he is talking with his wife, you know, with his hands on her cheek, I just go, there's a gentleness. And I don't know what he's saying. I imagine he's just whispering sweet nothings to his bride, but he is so gentle with her. And two words here stick out. You know, one is the word restore. 2 is gentleness. And so to restore something, if you think about a piece of furniture, an old piece of furniture, and we don't do this, but I've heard of what people do is you get the furniture and you strip it down and then you paint it, you restore it, you make it look like it used to look like. You make it look even better than it used to look. It's somebody with a broken arm. And so if somebody breaks an arm, a doctor, the word that's used here is the same word that's used of what a doctor does with a bone. They restore that bone to its place. They've got to pop it back. They've got to do their doctor thing and make it look like and work like it used to. Doesn't mean that typically that's really, really painful. That sounds horrible. But when we restore something, it's going to take some pain. It's like a healing pain to help put things back the way they were. And then the way that we do it, the word gentleness, this word gentle that's used in this verse is the same word that's used in 1 Peter 3:15. In 1 Peter 3:15, Peter is addressing, here's how you defend your faith. When somebody asks you for the hope that you have, you give them the answer. You give them the reason for the hope that you have. And so I'm with a non-believer and they're like, you know, Scott, there's something really different about you. You're joyful. You've got a hope about you that's really different. Why is that? I don't say because I've got a great wife, because my team is in the top 20, because I'm making a lot of money. I give the reason. The reason I have hope is because of Jesus. And then at the end of that verse, it says you do that, but you do it with gentleness and respect. And so the same way that I'm going to engage with a non-believer and sharing my faith, I'm going to seek to restore my wife with that same posture, not pointing the finger, not confronting in a hurtful way that's sinful and out of a wrong motive. Okay, might be hard. It's going to be painful at times, but I'm going to be gentle in the way that I do that. I love as Ted talked about empathy this morning, and just what does it look like to be empathetic, to really get in their shoes, to understand. And when we're empathetic, we're a lot more gentle. So I wore adult braces for 4 years. I just got them off in January. It was the best day, just the best day. And so I had them for 3 years and 9 months. Prior to me having them, 2 of my children had them. And so I don't remember which one. I know Duncan, I can't remember, Lincoln, I think. And so they had braces and I paid for them, but Kristen did all like the appointments and all the questions. And there was a time one of them had to put a little thing in the roof of their mouth and crank it. And like, she did all of that. I never paid attention to any of it. Okay. To my shame, I just didn't care. I'm like, I'm paying for it. She's taking care of it. You got braces. That's your problem, not mine. And then when I got braces, all of a sudden I cared deeply. And so I'm like, what do those colored bands do? Why do you have to do that? Like, how do I do this? How do I brush well? How do I floss? How do I get away with eating popcorn and not get in trouble with my orthodontist? I had a million questions because all of a sudden I was in their shoes and I cared. I was in their teeth, so to speak. And so when we are empathetic, it allows us to just to be more in tune, to care more, to really be gentle in the way that we engage with our spouse. Anything you add?
No.
Okay.
I like it.
All right.
The other thing that we need is encouragement. So Hebrews 3:13, encourage each day by day, as long as it's called today, so that none of us are hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. And so empathy is partly also encouragement. And then there's a quote here from Life Together, which is Bonhoeffer, and this speaks to spouse, but it also speaks to community here. So God has put this word into the mouth of others, and word is capitalized, so the Bible, his word, in order that it may be communicated to us. When one person is struck by the word, he speaks it to others. God has willed that we should seek and find his living word in the witness of a brother, in the mouth of a man. Therefore, the Christian needs another Christian who speaks God's word to him. He needs him again and again when he becomes uncertain and discouraged. For by himself, he cannot help himself without belying the truth. The Christ in his own heart is weaker than the Christ in the word of his brother. His own heart is uncertain. His brother's is sure. And so other believers speaking God's truth and God's word into you, this allows us to be gentle and allows us to restore our spouse.
And in that process, just remembering that this always takes patience. We need to be consistently reminded. It's easy to look at the sin that's in our spouse and just kind of go, well, why can't you just get over it? Or this is your problem. You need to fix it. And to lack this gentleness and empathy. What I think really helps is when we remember that even though they may be stuck in sin, we're a lot more like them than we realize. Like the gap between you and your spouse is so minuscule compared to the gap between you and Jesus. And so you are not like Jesus. You might think you are, and I hope you are, and I hope we're becoming more and more and more like Jesus. That's sanctification, that's the hope. But let's never lose sight of the fact that you're a lot more like your sinful, broken spouse than you are like our perfect Savior. And when I remember that, it allows me to be gentle, to be respectful, to be kind, to be patient with one another. And then to remember how the Lord sees us in our struggles and in our sin. That the Lord loves us, right? To be reminded that he loves you and I so much that he sent his son Jesus for us, not because of anything we did to deserve it. Out of his ridiculous, unbelievable love for us, he sent Jesus. And the way that he looks at our sin is he desires for us to become more like himself. He doesn't want to see the addict stuck in their sin. He doesn't want to see me slowly killing myself with the decisions I make for food. He doesn't want to see Kristen distracted and pulled in 50 directions because she wants the praise of humanity over really following God and what he wants for her. And so the Lord is grieved. And if we had a posture that we were grieved for our spouse like the Lord was, I think that would allow us to restore one another with gentleness and not demand that they so quickly change.
All right, Galatians 6:2, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. And so number four is help carry the burdens. And so this is also in Galatians 6:13, 14. You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free. Do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love. For the entire law is fulfilled in keeping this command. Love your neighbor as yourself. And so as we serve each other in love, that means we are carrying their burdens and we are fulfilling the law of Christ by sharing our neighbor, our closest neighbor, our spouse, and just loving that person well.
You said 5:13 or it's 5:13?
I think it's 5:13.
Did you say 6 or 5?
I think I said 5.
You said 5. Okay, my bad.
Yep. It's in Galatians.
Keep going.
All right. So a couple of practical questions, and I'll repeat these so you can get them if you'd like, is just to ask whichever one of you, whoever's the one struggling, the sin you've identified, ask your spouse what is most helpful to you. What can I do to help make your burden lighter or carry your burden? And is there anything I'm doing that makes this more challenging for you? So I'll say those again. The first is what's most helpful to you. What can I do to carry your burden or make it lighter? And is there anything that I'm doing that makes this more challenging for me, for you? All right, so we will real quick kind of role play. We'll use Scott's example because he always loves to be the example. And this is, for those of you that have done Merge, this is not speaker-listener, so we're, especially for the sake of time, we're just going to have the conversation. So, Scott, what is most helpful to you as you struggle with just eating and what that looks like?
I know I need to eat food, and so, like, don't be the food police and tell me I can't eat. So I need to eat, but probably just, like, practically, like thinking about places where we go eat for dinner. And so making sure that there's options. I think like thinking through what food is in our pantry. And so with four boys, we've got a lot of carbohydrates and Chex Mix and gummy this and candy. And like, that's unhelpful. So, like buying veggies and then, remind me how expensive vegetables are so I eat them and they don't rot in the fridge would be helpful.
Yeah. Check. Got that.
So just, I think, like, asking me what's helpful with food and what to buy. And I don't expect everyone else to not eat those things just because I don't want to or shouldn't, but just asking me what's helpful.
Okay. I can buy veggies and I can definitely remind you how expensive they are. All right. Anything else that I can do just to carry this burden, like just the weight of how hard it is to struggle with how you feel and what you're eating?
So that question, Kristen, you can tell she knows me because this is not practiced. Okay. This is the first time we're going. We did it in the first session different than this, but I'm a feelings person. I'm highly emotional. I'm like, I hate when people say guys don't have emotions. There's lots of hormones in this guy, okay? Just lots of feelings, all the feels, right?
All the feels, yep.
And so, like, that, I think that's a really great question is even, like, how am I feeling? And so there's some days when I'm super encouraged, you know, like, I might experience victory and know that I said no to some things I really wanted. And there's some days when I'm like, it's so unfair. I look at a piece of pizza and I just put on 6 pounds, you know, or, like, people... So just asking me how I'm doing, and then I need you to pray for me, and like just an ongoing dialogue. I need to be encouraged when I just want to quit.
I got that. Yeah. All right. Is there anything that I do that makes this struggle more challenging?
I thought of like when we go out somewhere. We were with our life group last week, carving pumpkins, and they got pizza. And everyone's eating pizza, and I really appreciated that even though I know you wanted a piece of pizza, you chose not to eat it in front of me because I really wanted it. And so I'm just thankful that you do that. I want you to be like, I hope there's a day when you can eat whatever you want, but there's some days when it's like, it's really hard for me. And so I appreciate that you are willing to sacrifice your desire just to help encourage me. Yeah.
So just keep doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so is that helpful? I mean, that's the kind of thing like you know your spouse, you ask what's helpful, like what do you need? And I might need this on a Monday and I might need this on a Tuesday. And so
true story.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's changed. It's like I'm pregnant. I mean, like things change all the time. You never know
you
what you're
doing. You cannot use that as
okay,
the
not like that. I couldn't handle that. But it's
I think we all know that. Like if your struggle is, you know, anxiety or depression, like some days are great. You wake up and all is right in the world, and then other days you're just like, I don't even know what I need.
Yeah.
And so like the other part of this is like if you're talking about your struggle, like be willing to one to figure out what you need. And so I am not a great like verbal on the spot processor. So if Scott said, hey, what can I do? I'd be like, hey, I'll be back. Let's reconvene on this. Let me go journal. Let me go think just like through my day and figure out what it is. But you have to offer something to your spouse so that they can partner with you.
That's good. All right. Really quick, a few other things and we'll move on to the next one. The whole deal about carrying burdens, you got to get your hands messy and dirty. And so we had this old TV in our garage. We needed to bring it upstairs. It's the old school TV with a box in the back. So it's not like a really thin, light one.
Most of you have never seen one of those. When I look around the room, like you don't even know what we're talking about.
Definitely Bob Rudy. He knows what I'm talking about. He's old.
Somebody really knows. But
yes, and so the old heavy ones. And so I ask my kids to come help me, and two of them are busy, and one of them does. And he comes down there to the garage. It's middle of Texas summer, so it's 192 degrees out. And I'm like, hey, can you help me move this TV? And so he goes over and he picks up the remote control, the power cable, and the HDMI cable. And I'm like, okay, let's go. I need your help. He's like, I am helping. I'm like, no, you're not helping. But when you help, when you carry the burden, you don't carry the light stuff. You get your hands in the mix, and you are getting dirty and messy, and you are doing the hard work. And so if he's really going to help me, he's going to get right in the middle of the TV. We're going to be close to each other. We're going to be able to smell each other. I mean, there's like this, we are in it together. When you carry a burden, you don't just watch from a distance and carry the HDMI cable and the remote. You get in the mix with them, and you're married. And so, like, who else would you want to get closer to and get more in the mix with than your spouse? And so you sacrificially will do what you need to do to carry the burden. And then I know this sounds a little counterintuitive, but when your spouse shares with you, a lot of times there's like this deep shame that we don't want to admit it. And so when your spouse asks for help, I think a great response, we're going to talk about what they need to do, but what you can do when they ask you for help, when they want your help, is you thank them for being open. You show mercy. You remind each other that you are on the same team. Proverbs 28:13, he who conceals his sin will not prosper, but the one who confesses and forsakes his sin will find mercy. And so when your spouse confesses, when they open up, give them mercy. It doesn't mean there's not work for them to do. We'll talk about that. But the response that you have towards them goes a long way in either shutting them down or helping them engage in the battle. And then we would want you to pray for them. And I know that's the most obvious thing ever, but I love that this has already come up a few times in this conference, of challenging the guys last night to pray and then having an opportunity today for the wife to pray and for the husband to pray. The divorce rate, what divorce rates do we typically hear for married couples? What have you heard? 50%, 30%, 40%. Anyone know the divorce rate for couples who pray together out loud on a consistent basis? Any guesses? Who said that? What'd you say? Less than 1%. How did you know that? Oh, you went to merge. Okay. I don't think we used to teach that in Merge. This is like, well, some maybe we did. You're just really smart. Some people are really more holy and just kind of get it. And so less than 1%. Okay, so that's a cute anecdotal statistic from a marriage pastor. Gallup, who does research, 1 out of 1,152 couples who pray together consistently out loud will get divorced. That means 1,000, if I could do my math right, 1,151 will not get divorced. That is a whole lot less than 1%. Can you hear that? And you're like, well, yeah, of course. I know we're supposed to pray together. That's just what you do. But how many of us are actually praying together out loud on a consistent basis? How many of us just hear it and you're going to walk out and you're not going to pray because you've heard it over and over again and we're tired and we're selfish and we're lazy and we don't think about it and we don't think it works and there's all kinds of excuses. But I'm like, I heard that and it's just like, man, we've got to do this, right? If the divorce rate is that low, and I don't know if it's the couple who prays together, if they're more likely to stay married, I believe that's absolutely true, that they're less likely to get divorced, but there's something that God does. When we pray together, there is some kind of protection that he's putting over us that lowers that divorce rate. And so super practically, there's two things that I have had to do that have been helpful. We got married on September 15th, 2001. And so at 9:15 every single night, 9:15 p.m., my alarm goes off and it says, pray for your marriage. And so that means I'm praying for Scott, I'm praying for Kristen, I'm praying that we would have the marriage that we really want, that God desires for us. That doesn't mean we're praying together at 9:15. I'm praying for our marriage. At 10 p.m., 7 days a week, the alarm goes off for pray with your wife. That means that we are praying together. And so every single night, that alarm is set. And our kids are, we got teenagers, they're never in bed at 10, which means we're never in bed at 10, but I'm hitting snooze. And so it's 10 o'clock and then 10:09 and then 10:18 and 10:27. That thing keeps going off until we pray together as a couple. So I don't know what your thing is, but I want you to figure it out. I don't want just like a bunch of stares looking at us and going, this guy's crazy, or we're not doing that. I want you to pray for your marriage. Okay, I want you to bear each other's burdens. I want you to take those burdens in front of the Lord, and I believe that will change your marriage, not just statistically, but over and over and over we have seen it. If it's not, you know, pray for one another. That is one of the best ways, one of the most powerful ways, if not the most powerful way, to carry the burdens of your spouse. Number five, going to verse five, Galatians 6:5, for each should carry their own load. We each have to, point five, encourage your spouse to carry their own load. You are getting your hands dirty, you're in the mix, you're carrying their burdens, but they've got a role to play as well. And so what does it look like for you to lovingly encourage your spouse to do their part? Sometimes there's not much they could do. They might be so impaired because of their sin that you're going to have to do the heavy lifting. There's other times, and most of the time, when there's something that we can do. And so the Greek in verse 2, when it talks about the burden, it's actually something really heavy. This load in verse 5, it's almost like a backpack. We should be able to carry our own load. And so it's not fair for me to say to Kristen, I'm really struggling with eating, and so you need to, you know, sacrifice what you want. You need to buy healthy food. You need to not eat in front of me. All of those things are helpful, but I got my own work to do. And so right now, you know, I'm doing this thing called 75 hard, which is 75 days of tough stuff on earth. And so like 75 days of restrictive eating and going on a really healthy diet that's good for me. And I'm drinking a lot of water and I'm working out every day. And so like I'm carrying my load right now. It's my responsibility to do whatever I can do to be faithful in my sin struggle. And so she helps me carry the burden, and then I'm going to carry my own load as well.
All right. The next point is to know the time. And so this, y'all have heard this. You need to know when it's time to widen the circle. And so when you've got a struggle that is difficult for the two of you to bear, you need to know when it is time to pull in. It could be anybody. It might be you need medical help. It might be that you need community. It may be that you need counseling. It may be like regen. There's a whole slew of options, especially if you are a part of this body. You probably could run down them for me. But just figuring out when do you need to pull somebody else in. And this is hard. Like most of the time, a lot of the time, these are big things. These are confessions that bring guilt and shame with them. And so just know that you are met with grace and mercy and that these steps are the way to get healing and to get help. One thing about, like, if your spouse is the one with a struggle, you can't want this more than they do. And so that's part of, like, they have to carry some of the load. You can't carry it for them. You can't make other people change. And so you cannot take more responsibility than your spouse. You may have to work harder sometimes, as Scott said. There are times where the other person is just in a really hard, bad spot. There is a quote from Andy Stanley, and this is one of his new books, The New Rules for Love, Sex, and Dating. He says, if you're in a relationship with someone who is depending on you to help him or her become a better person or change, it's not going to happen. That is beyond your ability. You can't change another person for the better any more than that person can change you. People will change when they decide to change. If you're in a relationship because you believe your right person is going to help you change, you're wasting your most valuable resource, which is time. And so that's kind of convicting for me because you think about, I can't change him and he can't change me. And so like when I think about how hard I want to help or change, but I'm also not, I know he can't change me. So it's the work of the Holy Spirit and Jesus in us, but know when to pull other people in.
Yeah, so know when it's time to pull in community ministries like Reengage, Regen, whether it's time to go to rehab, whether it's time to go to a counselor, whether it's time to get on medication, whether it's time to put something on your phone like Covenant Eyes if you struggle with porn, when it's time to go to a doctor. A really good book I recently read is by Gary Thomas. And so Gary Thomas has been here to Watermark a couple times, speak on marriage, and he's written a bunch of great books. He's written more books on marriage than most of us will ever read, you and your spouse combined. I mean, the guy is prolific. Anyway, the book is called, I meant to bring a copy and I forgot, but it's called Making Your Marriage a Fortress. And what Gary does in this book, it's 9 different chapters of 9 different couples. One couple, the spouse is sexually addicted. Another couple, the spouse has a chronic illness. Another couple, the spouse is, or they lost a child, their only child at the age of 19. And so every one of these chapters, he just teaches through these stories. And I looked at the nine, and we don't have, like, none of them are our story, but I learned from every single one of them. And so learning from somebody really smart and who loves the Lord, like Gary Thomas, just know the time when you need to bring in some other help.
All right, and point number seven is it's a shared work. So we've kind of talked about the whole thing here is like helping the other person out. But remember, we are one flesh. If you are married, you have committed to that. We should be able to be intimate, so to know and be known without fear of rejection from your spouse. You need to help celebrate. So celebrate the wins. When things are going well, even the littlest things, if you know you're taking ground in this area, celebrate those things. This is an area that as married believers, we should shine to the rest of the world. Like people should see Jesus in us by the way we help our spouse. Also, when we say it's a shared work, it is a shared work, not just here, but it's a shared work of the cord of three strands. There are three of us. Jesus is the one who is carrying us through this, who is helping us to make the change. This is a spiritual battle. Our struggles are always a spiritual battle. And so pray. Don't be afraid to stand in the gap for your spouse and to just share in this. Because also the rejoicing is shared as well.
Good. So 7 points summarized, and then one last thought, and we'll do a few questions. And so 7 points is just expect difficulty. We're in a broken world. Second, this is a good test to see if I remember everything, is that we're going to address the specific issue with specific examples. We are going to restore with gentleness. We're going to be gentle and kind with one another. We're going to carry their burden. We're going to carry our own load. We're going to know when it's time to bring others in so we're not just battling on our own. And then we remember this is the shared work that we get to do together. That when we made these vows to one another, in the better or worse, sickness and in health, richer or poorer, that we committed to be on mission together in our marriage. And so does anyone know what, I'm going to, SAT word, the word cupellation, does anyone know what that means? See if this room is smarter than the first hour. Anyone? I'm assuming you know because you know everything. No? Okay, so cupellation, maybe you've heard of this before, but this is the process of making silver. And so what they do is you take whatever the compound is that has some traces of silver in it, and you put it in a big pot, you know, a cauldron is what I envision it, and you heat it up with, you know, with something really hot with coals, and all of this stuff is in this pot, and you're just mixing it up, and you know, you're trying to break down the solid into a liquid, and it keeps heating up. And what happens is that the impurities start to move up towards the top. And so then you take this skimmer and you skim off the impurities. Anyone know what the impurities are called?
Dross,
yes, very good. And so you pull, you know what cupellation is, and you didn't even know it. And so you pull the dross off, and you throw it aside, and you stir again. Okay, and the messy stuff comes to the surface, and you take your skimmer, and you pull off the dross, and you get rid of it, and you keep stirring, and the dross and the impurities keep coming, or the impurities come up, you pull it away. You keep doing this over and over and over and over until eventually you've got your cauldron. I don't even know what you do it in, but that's just what I picture in my head. And you look in the cauldron and you don't see black impurities and dross. You look in and you see your reflection. You look down in this thing and it looks just like you. And as I thought, that's just like such a good picture for what we get to do in marriage. Like we're heating this thing up. We're dealing with the problems. We're in the mix. We're doing all the stuff we talk through, and we're just continually, I'm getting the skimmer and I'm pulling my stuff off, and Kristen's getting and she's pulling the dross off, and the Lord is the one who's really doing the work, and we keep going and we do this over and over and over and over, and eventually the hope is that we get over this thing and the two of us look in and we see our reflection. We also see Jesus looking right back at us, not because he's in the pot, but because we look more and more and more and more like Jesus Christ. And marriage gives us this gift, right, that we've got this spouse who was in the battle with us. And there's some days when you can't even move your arms around. You can't even, like, light the flame, right? And they're there doing that with you. And there's other days you're in there together. You know, you're like, and some days I'm doing more than she is, but that's the privilege that we get with one another of helping one another become more and more and more like Jesus Christ. And that is how we partner together with our spouse for growth and change. So we've got a few minutes for questions. So anything's fair game. If we missed any blanks or any questions. Yeah, right here. What if there aren't glaring sin struggles? There's always going to be something, okay? And so I ask myself that question often of, you know, what if I don't have any problems? No, it's Kristen, to be honest, she's unbelievable. Like, this is, yes, good, yes. Yeah, there's so many, even like as we're thinking through this, of like we can talk about 10 different issues. I'm like, I know your deal, and it's just people-pleasing, and it's just, you know, and so that's the problem. When we minimize our sin, there's this book by Jerry Bridges called Respectable Sins, where we elevate some sins as more sinful than others. And so adultery, murder, you know, those are the real bad sins, but things like cussing and pride and frustration and a lack of contentment, those aren't really big sins. Those are just like small sins. And that's consequences. Consequences of me cussing are a lot different than me murdering someone, but it's still sin. And so that's where when we go, I want everything. I'm putting it all out there, everything in my life. And there are areas, as amazing as I'm sure your wife is, there's some areas that you need to address and work on. And they're challenging. But when I minimize Kristen's people pleasing, I'm minimizing sin. And I'm remembering that we're a lot more like each other than we are the Lord. It's a good question. Great question. Does that help?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So the part about like addressing specific issues and kind of the timing, right? Obviously, like
yes.
Right in the moment when you're in the middle of conflict, probably. But what do you recommend as kind of the, obviously, you know, try not to go to bed angry, but,
yeah.
You know, if it's, especially if it's a repeating issue and you're trying to address it, what would you give counsel on?
It's good. When addressing the issue, what's best for timing?
Yeah, and also,
yeah.
But also gently, you know, lovingly.
How and when do you address it? What if it's like, do you go to bed angry, all that stuff? So, even thoughts? All right. So, heard Andy Stanley, we just quoted him. He had this great line. He said, truth is never optional, but timing and method are. And so, we always have to address it, but there's a time that's better, and the way that we do it is better. And so, we've learned, you know, at 10:45 at night is not the time to address our stuff. And so that doesn't mean that we go to bed and go, everything's honky-dory and wonderful in our world, and, you know, there's pigeons, doves, or whatever, like, dancing around us. Like, it's not, we don't pretend. I don't know. Yes.
Doves.
Everything's happy.
Halos.
Yeah.
Hearts.
Yes. And so, like, it's okay to go to bed angry. That verse, you know, Ephesians 4:26, do not let the sun go down on your anger. That doesn't mean you stay up until you figure it out. That means that, you know, it might be a night where we go, hey, I'm frustrated and I'm tired of this. But man, I love you and I am committed and we're going to work through it. And so this may not be the best time. Like when I'm about to go out the door for work, that's not the time to bring up the conflict. And so when that happens, it's like, thank you for bringing it up. I love you. We're going to work on it. This isn't the best time. And so, but I promise you, because I'm committed to us, that we're going to make this thing happen. And so think through the best timing. Don't use timing as an excuse. If you're somebody who's a conflict withdrawer, you can always use like, well, it's just not a good time. It's never a good time. And so you got to figure out a time, but think through what's the most optimal time to work through it. It's good. Maybe one more or go.
But, well, I was going to say, I think like the respect and the, and so just like find it, there are encouragements, there's things that he's doing well. And then I think you can also say, hey, I think you're struggling with this. I might be off, but is this something that you want to address? Is this something that you see? And so just, I think asking questions, being curious, I think that shows a little bit more respect than, you know, that's the gentleness, not the you're messing up or this is what I see, but like, hey, and you can always like, hey, this is what I'm struggling with. I'd love for your give me some help, anything that you might need help with, or I see this. So just kind of working it in together.
That's good, right? We'll be around afterwards if you have any questions or anything. I think the next session starts at 2:30. I'm in the main auditorium. I want to give you one last thought, and then I'll pray. Shared this at the end of the last time with the first group, the first breakout. I'm a physical therapist in my former occupation. She was actually my teacher. That's how we met. Is she threatened to fail me if I didn't date her, and so all that, you know. But we worked together in a hospital in Atlanta when I was her student, and I had this patient who was the most prideful patient I've ever had in my life, and he had a spinal cord injury, and I kept trying to help him in his recovery. And so I'm doing PT with him, and I'd say, okay, if you want to get up from the bed, you need to, you know, move your left leg before you move the right one. And he'd go, I know it. And I'd say, okay, and you need to make sure when you sit up that you hold onto the railing. Say, I know it. And when you get in your wheelchair, you need to make sure you put the lock on. He goes, I know it. And over, I'd start making stuff up. I'm like, you know, the temperature outside is 324. I know it. He consistently had this response of, I know it. And eventually the guy kept falling to the ground because he wouldn't listen to anyone. And, I think of that guy, and there's no way he's still alive. I mean, he was so prideful. Yes. I'm not that old. It wasn't that long ago. Yeah, it was a long time ago. Yes. Yeah, there's no way. Like, he's just so prideful, and he kept falling, and you know, and I, just like the verse that we hear over and over, and we know, but it's, you know, it's James 4:6, 1 Peter 5, it's in Proverbs chapter 3, but God opposes the proud and gives grace to the humble. And so as you think about your struggle, like if you want to get well, if you want your marriage to get well, I'm just going to encourage you to not be an I know it person and be somebody who's humble and teachable. It's so hard to do. But when we're not humble, when we're prideful, when we're an I know it person, our spouse opposes us, God opposes us. And so I'm just going to pray really briefly that we would be people who are humble. And if we want to have the marriage that doesn't keep falling down, that we would be people who are humble and teachable. So God, I pray for every single couple in this room. Pray that we would depend on you in every single way, that apart from you, we could do nothing. God, I pray that we would be humble with our spouse. I pray that we'd be humble with others. I pray that we'd admit at times that we fall short and need all the help that we can get. I pray that we would see our spouse as a gift to help us become more like your son, Jesus, and not the enemy, but a gift to us. I pray for any couple in this room who is just really in the midst of it right now and they don't know what to do. I pray they'd know the time of when they need to pull others in. I pray that they would be humble. I pray that they would ask for help. God, for those who are doing well, I pray that they would excel still more. And I pray that through this weekend, through this conference, that there'd be an army of marriages who want to follow you with everything in them. They'd see their marriage as a gift of the privilege we get to help each other become more like your son, Jesus. So thank you for this time together. Thank you for these couples. We love you. In your name we pray. Amen.